day and welcome to this week's episode of Strictly Legal on WESN Content Capital. I am your host, Rondell Donohue, attorney at law, and once again, I am happy to be here. I'm happy to be alive, and I'm happy to bring the law on you. Of course, you can stream us on all WESN platforms, including our traditional media, as well as Strictly Legal with Rondell Donohue on our podcast. Of course, today we are going to speak about a very interesting topic with relation to intellectual property, more particularly trademarks. I mean, of course, you know that intellectual property, it's a widely known area of law. Particularly in Trinidad and Tobago, we have a very extensive intellectual property office, in case you don't know. And of course, many persons or many companies or entities may want to ask the question, what is trademark or why should I register my design or my logo, etc. And today we have none other than Mr. Rita Kalu, who is an attorney at law who specializes particularly in intellectual property. A bit about her, she has been practicing law for over a decade, and as I said, she specializes in IP protection, management, litigation, and enforcement through her law practice based in Port of Spain, Rita Kalu Law. She's also founder of IP Harvester Limited, an IP management company that offers IP management services in the Caribbean region, such as IP valuations, IP audits, and IP due diligence. Of course, IP meaning intellectual property. Rita is a WIPO certified trainer at the National Intellectual Property Training Center of Trinidad and Tobago and holds a master's degree in intellectual property law and management from the University of Strasbourg, France. She's also designated co-chair of the International Affairs Committee of the International Institute of IP Management, an internationally recognized professional association for quality in IP management based in Switzerland. Rita is currently pursuing her PhD research in the field of IP management. So we have a very illustrious guest in our studio today, and I'm happy for her to be here. Ms. Kalu, good day. How are you?
Good day. I'm very good. Thank you. And thank you for having me on the show.
And thank you for coming. I mean, I'm very impressed with your resume. And of course, you know, being an IP professional, I mean, it's a very niche area. And of course, it's something that, it takes quite an extensive amount of work and knowledge for you to get there. So I'm grateful for you to be here. And I'm sure the listening and viewing audience are also grateful for you to be here, actually.
Thank you very much.
So let's get right into the topic. Of course, you know, let's start with the basic. What is really intellectual property?
Intellectual property, in a nutshell, refers to the expressed creations of the mind. And the key component and the key word there is expressed. So a lot of persons say, you know, I have a great idea and, you know, I have a great concept. But until it's actually expressed, it does not become intellectual property. And there are many different types of intellectual property and many different rights that you can have. So you could have, for example, patent rights, industrial design rights, trademark rights, which we'll be delving into today. And it is important, therefore, to really understand what type of protection you're looking for and then determine what would be the best type of IP right to be able to protect your IP with.
And of course, you know, I mean, as you said, IP really surrounds you have copyright, designs, patents, trademarks. And of course, today we are going to speak about trademark, right, more particularly. And of course, could you just tell us exactly what is a trademark, particularly in this context?
Yes, so trademarks are actually the most popular IP right that's utilized here in Trinidad and Tobago. And more I've seen companies, you know, really focusing on, you know, their brand and building their brand through trademark protection, of course. Trademarks refers to, it's essentially the badge of origin of a company. So it's what, when you look at a particular sign, a symbol, that you connect that to a particular source, being a particular company or particular business. And it's any sign that can be represented graphically. So it can be a name. It could be an image or a logo. It could be a combination. It could be a slogan. And what we can get into later on is that we now have non-traditional trademarks as well. So there's really a host of different types of signs you can use to distinguish your goods and services from other traders.
And I'm happy that you mentioned, you know, in terms of it's a design. Well, more a logo. All right. So you're saying that also, in terms of slogan, can be trademarked.
Yes, that's correct.
Can you just give examples of slogans? Because I note that Of course, words. I've always been told that words cannot be cannot be trademarked unless you have a particular logo or design. Is that correct?
No, you can protect a slogan on its own as a trademark. So, for example, one of the most famous slogans most persons will be familiar with is the Nike slogan, "Just Do It." You know, that in itself, the slogan in itself is a protected trademark. And that when you see that without seeing the Nike swoosh sign, you would know immediately what company and what is the source of those goods and services.
Yeah, correct. And in terms of the I know you mentioned what is the trademark, but the benefits of having your mark, well, protected, as we said. Could you just inform us of what?
Yes. So intellectual property, any type of intellectual property right, is meant to grant exclusivity. So it allows you exclusivity to, in particular, in terms of trademarks, it allows you exclusivity to use a particular name, a sign, a sound, we'll get to that later on, exclusive to all other traders in that particular field. So it's specific to the goods and services you trade in, and it gives you exclusivity so that no other person could use anything exactly like it or even similar to it to cause any sort of confusion. Trademarks in itself can be used and can be developed into an asset. It's an actual intangible asset that you could then utilize and you could monetize it. You can license, franchise, and commercialize essentially the asset itself. It could also be leveraged. So, for example, you have a particular value and reputation with this particular trademark for specific goods and services. It could then be used to very easily expand into other areas and other markets very easily because persons know a particular quality and reputation with that particular trademark. So when you branch out into other markets and other, you know, fields, you immediately have that connection with consumers and they immediately have that trust because they're seeing the trademark there. So it actually helps you to even expand very easily and quicker into other markets as well.
And when you speak about the protection of the assets, can you just explain more on that?
Yes, so any type of intellectual property is considered to be an intangible asset. So we can't see it, but it is an actual asset that you can trade with. So in certain jurisdictions, and I'm happy to say that even in our jurisdiction, I've been seeing it recently, where you can actually use your IP as security, as collateral. You can, yes, and then you can also use it to earn revenue from it. So, for example, if you want to expand, but you may not have the resources, or you may just want to focus on your particular business, you can create a franchise and license the use of that particular asset to another company. And that way you could actually expand quicker, grow your brand quicker without having to actually put out all of those resources. So it's an asset.
And of course, if you are licensing that asset, it means the asset has to be a tangible asset.
Well, it's considered to be intangible. In the sense that we cannot see it.
But when I say tangible, I mean in terms of it has to bring some value. So intangible, yes, yeah, but it has
so
to bring
it has
some.
It has to have value,
yes,
attached to it.
Yes.
And what is interesting, and if you look worldwide, what the trend that we have been seeing for maybe the last decade is that all of these, you know, Fortune 500 companies, when you look at what their value is, the biggest majority of the value in their company is actually the intangible asset. And I can give you the example, yes, of Apple. So they have valued Apple and the logo itself without any, you know, of their software and or hardware and all of these things, just the logo alone is estimated to be worth over $1 billion.
Wow.
So it's a very valuable, intangible asset that can be traded with.
Interesting. And of course, you know, a question will arise with respect to companies. Now, companies who register pursuant to the Companies Act incorporate their companies. And sometimes they may wonder, I have already incorporated my company. Why is it that I need to now protect my trademark? Can you just speak to us about that?
Yes. So that's a common question I get asked. And there's somewhat a misconception that, you know, if you register your company with Companies Registry, you know, and you're using that as your trademark, that you have all of these rights. But the company's registry is separate and distinct from the trademark's registry, and both registries are governed by separate laws. In terms of company's registry, when you register, that prevents other traders from registering the same name or something very closely similar to it. And it gives you that type of protection, but it does not stop other persons from using in the trade without registering anything similar to your name. And a lot of the times, persons equate their company name with their trademark. And aspects of your company name may form part of your trademark. But as you said, you will have a slogan, you may have a logo. And all of these things are your actual trademark, and that's not protected under the company's registry. But if you look at the trademark's registry and you register there, there's a broad spectrum of rights where no other trader in the field, within the jurisdiction, is allowed to use anything similar to it. So it has nothing to do with registration, but actual trading, no one else is able to use that particular mark that you have registered.
So let's say, for instance, a company such as like the flower shop. Let's just use that example. So the flower shop has registered their incorporated company as a limited liability. However, they would now, they want to use a particular flower, a lotus flower. And it so happens that another company would have registered that mark, right? But it's not the flower shop. So they register that mark as something else. Now, in terms of the rights, who has the rights to the flower?
Well, in our trademark system is a first-to-file system.
Yes.
So based on the example, I would say the person who would have registered that particular device, and you mean they registered it under the trademark?
Yes, under the trademark. Yeah.
So
yes.
They would have that trademark. So when the flower shop comes with anything similar to that, they would actually be in breach of the trademark rights of that owner.
Although the flower shop would have been incorporated first.
Yes, because it's just the name as opposed to the logo.
Correct. And that's interesting. So therefore, can you just explain how do you go about now to protect your trademark, or rather, what is the process?
Well, in terms of being able to protect your trademark, you have to meet a certain criteria or threshold. So I'm very happy you use the flower shop example.
Yes.
Because it shows you everything you should not do. So trademark has to be distinctive. And by distinctive, it means it should not be descriptive. So the flower shop, for example, is descriptive. You know it's selling flowers. It should not be generic. It should not use generic terms that is common to the trade. So flower shop.
Yes.
Yeah. So you use a perfect example as to what not to trademark.
Yes.
And the reason being is that you're using a trademark to distinguish yourself in the market. So you want to be as unique and, you know, as differentiating as possible. And so the more unique and the more distinctive a mark is, the higher the possibility that you would be able to register it. And another factor that you would have to take into consideration when you're creating your brand and creating your trademark is what actually exists in the market, whether unregistered or registered. And so you would always have to do a search to make sure there are no other prior marks that are very similar or the same as your mark relative to those goods and services that you're trading in. So if there was already the flower store, for example, registered as a trademark, that would block your application, the flower shop.
Even though it's two different designs or two different types of flowers, flower designs?
Well, it would depend on how similar it is, but because it depends on what is the dominant part of each mark, and then we would have to compare the similarities to determine whether or not it would, you know, block the other one.
So let's go through in terms of the process of registration. How does one, okay, I have my design, and of course design meaning logo, mm-hmm. right? I would have incorporated my company, let's say, even if I don't incorporate my company, but I want to protect my design. What do I do? How do I go about that in Trinidad and Tobago?
So first and foremost, I would say you would do a prior search. It's not mandatory, but it's always recommended to make sure what you have is really distinctive in our particular market and there's nothing that's going to bar your registration.
And this is through the Intellectual Property Office.
Correct.
In Trinidad.
Yes.
Many people don't even realize we have an intellectual property.
Who
are very efficient.
They are excellent.
Excellent.
You know, and a lot of persons always tell me, you know, I didn't know, you know, we have an intellectual property office. They have a lot of preconceptions about it.
Yeah.
And I mean, in comparison to other IP offices I've, you know, seen worldwide, we actually have extremely well-trained staff that have been there, you know, over a decade, and they're constantly upgrading, you know, their skill sets. And so they're very helpful. So first step, for example, could be to go to the intellectual property office because they offer a wealth of guidance and they're always very happy.
Happy to assist.
Yes, very, always very happy. I actually used to work at the intellectual property office.
Yes.
And so I could tell you firsthand that, you know, like they really try to support business owners, persons who may not want to be represented by an attorney. They may want to do it on their own. And they really hold your hand throughout the entire process. So you can start with a search, you know, see what's on the registry already. And then you would have to first make an application before the office. And when you make that application, one of the most challenging considerations for an applicant is to determine the class of goods and services that you're applying for, because every trademark is specific to goods and services. So you can't just get the flower shop for every single good and service. So you'll be registering the flower shop for flower shop services. And we have something called the NIST classification system here that we use. It's an international classification system used worldwide. And based on that, it determines what your classes of goods and services would be. And it could be a very technical process, but again, as you said, you can go to the IPO and they would help you in terms of doing that classification. You could go to IP practitioners who can help you with that classification.
Let's pick up in there, because you mentioned that with respect to the flower shop, of course, it has to be specific to the goods and services that you provide.
Correct.
So let's say, for instance, the flower shop are providing a service of selling sealer flowers. But then you have also a flower construction company, right, with the same type of flower but doing construction. Then is it that there's competing? Is it that the two designs will be competing?
More likely not.
Okay.
Because it's such different and not, so it's the same or similar classes of goods and services.
Okay.
Because it's such complete separate and distinct businesses and trades, it would most likely not bar.
But then what about what about if the marks are similar?
If
the design
is very similar, it may bar it, but so essentially what the examiner would do would be as a whole to look and see whether or not it would be confusingly similar to a consumer. So whether someone going to this construction place would believe that particular trader is the same trader as the flower shop.
Okay.
Yeah, so it all depends on what they do is that they look at the mark as a whole and they compare everything. So they compare visually what it looks like, orally, what does the word sound like, and then conceptually, you know, where are the goods? What kind of goods are they? Where would you go to the same store, for example, for the same services? So, and then based on that, they would make an assessment on whether or not it's confusingly similar.
Okay. Of course, you can continue in terms of the process.
Yes.
My apologies.
Yes. So you make your application, you figure out your classification, and you file that with the intellectual property office with the specimen of whatever your trademark is. And I should put a pin here and make a note that a lot of times persons, as you said, you have a logo, a flower design, and more likely than not, that business owner was not the one that designed it. And so we always advise clients that when you're going for trademark protection, there's particular copyright rights subsisting in that artwork itself.
Yes.
And so I always advise all of my clients to make sure and get those rights assigned from the graphic artist, because as an independent contractor, they would be, you know, the owner of the copyright, and you want holistic rights because you're putting so much value into it.
Yes.
And so we always recommend, you know, you go and you get that you get a copyright assignment for that, and then make your application.
That is very interesting, because I don't think much persons know that. They think that, okay, I pay a graphic artist for that design, and therefore I own that design. Right,
yes.
But of course, it still means that the graphic artist still has some form of rights, right?
Particularly
in the design.
And
obviously, it is clear, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, that you are the graphic artist is basically licensing his design to
Correct.
You for your use if it's in perpetuity
Correct.
Or whatever the case
Yes.
is, but it's not really an assignment.
Yes, correct. And
or transfer of those rights to you as the person who retained.
And why it becomes
artist,
why it becomes important is because you want to have as many rights as possible so that if there's an infringement, if there's a breach, that the Trademarks Act, for example, the rights that you have under that may not protect that particular situation. But if you look under the Copyrights Act, you may have protection under that system. And because you're actually putting so much, you know, investment behind your brand, you want to have a holistic, you know, ownership of it. And a lot of times clients unfortunately realize this, like, unfortunately, for example, when there's infringement and they need these particular rights, they realize, oh wait, I don't have ownership of this particular image, you know? So it's important, it's an important consideration, and it's an important discussion to have with the graphic artist before you retain them and, you know, you commission the work. So once you get all of that done and you file your application, and the application goes through different types of examination. So firstly, you have the formalities examination just to make sure everything is right with the application itself. And then you go through classification examination, make sure that the goods and services that you have applied for is the correct classification in accordance with the NIST classification system. Then it goes to the substantive examination. So this is when it comes before a trademark examiner, and they examine it based on two grounds. Absolute, has it met the threshold of being distinctive? Is it, you know, not descriptive, not generic, and things like that, misleading? And then the second examination would be whether it's on relative grounds, whether they are existing applications or registered marks that are confusingly similar that would bar that particular registration.
So this is particularly in our jurisdiction.
Yes.
Right. Okay.
And yes, and it's like that for, I would say, all jurisdictions. It's pretty standard.
Yeah, okay.
And what I can also say, because, of course, we might have someone looking who has the flower shop as their trademark, and they say, okay, well, you know, I've been trading for the last 10 years, and everyone knows the flower shop is, you know, my trademark, but now they're saying it's not distinctive, so I can't get registration. So there's also another way in which you can get an inherently non-distinctive trademark registered. So if your trademark has acquired distinctiveness over a long period of time where the relevant public and relevant consumers see it as a trademark, even though it uses generic terms like flower and shop, you can still file for registration. If at that point, you know, it's too late, you can't afford to start over, you have so much goodwill, so much reputation, you can still file for trademark registration. And you can attach evidence to show how distinctive your mark has become in the marketplace.
Oh, okay. So it's a matter also of reputation as well.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes. So that's just a point for persons who, you know, may have you know, very common names, and they have been trading for quite a long time. It's kind of hard to change it now.
Yes.
And then after the substantive examination, the examiner would either accept your mark if it passes both the absolute and relative grounds test, or they can refuse your mark. So first I will go through when they accept it. So if they accept your mark, it then goes for publication. So we have an online journal where every single Wednesday the IP office would post all of the marks to give notice to the public that this particular proprietor is applying for this particular mark for these goods and services. And from the date of publication, time starts to run for 3 months. And once there are no oppositions filed by any other party, within those 3 months, your trademark is automatically registered. And you can choose to then apply for a certificate of registration. Even without the certificate of registration, you have a registered trademark. And if you do not, if you get a refusal, you have a chance to ask the IP office to reconsider. So what that means is that they would tell you the grounds upon which they are refusing your trademark, and you are now giving the opportunity to make legal submissions and, you know, argue why your trademark meets the threshold and criteria for registrability in Trinidad and Tobago.
So is it at this point you now have to retain an attorney at law to deal with that technical aspect?
I wouldn't say you have to.
Right.
At this point, I would recommend an attorney. So I would say you don't necessarily need an attorney to make the application. It's something you could handle on your own,
yes.
Particularly because of how helpful the IP office
is. Yes.
For reconsideration, that might be a good idea at that point to retain legal counsel, because they would be familiar with the cases and be able to make the legal arguments more succinctly. So I would say yes, that would be advisable. And you actually have three opportunities. So even if you send a reconsideration, they still don't agree with you, you can submit more evidence, you could make more arguments, and you have three chances at that to try and get your trademark accepted by the IP office. And in total, the whole process takes, I would say, between 9 to 12 months before you get the registration. So it takes about 6 to 9 months for all of the different examinations. And well, now you understand why it takes so long, because of the different stages it has to go through. And then you have the extra 3 months with the opposition procedure. And so it would take you about 9 to 12 months for registration. But the important fact is the application, because as I said, it's a first-to-file system. So once you have that first filing date, that is the important part there, and because that's the date of your registration.
Yes. So you mentioned, you've started with the examining process, and of course the acceptance, right, and certain circumstances, as you said, why a mark could be rejected. Because of the non-distinctiveness or competing marks, right? Now in terms of fees to register trademarks, what are usually the fees associated with such registration?
So the initial application is $1,400 TT, but it's based on the number of classes and the number of classes that you're applying for. So for the first, so if you're applying for one class of goods and services, it's $1,400. Any additional class, it's $150 per additional class. And what I would say at this point is a question I always ask my clients when they're applying, is that you should consider over the next 5 years, what you may only have one goods or service that you're using right now, but in the next 5 years, do you plan on expanding within that 5 years? Because it's more cost effective to make the application with the additional goods and services at that point. Otherwise, you would have to make an entirely new application when you expand. So at that point, you choose what classes of goods and services you want, and it's $150 per additional class. And the only other costs you would incur would be if you decide to get the certificate of registration, which is $350 for the certificate.
Right, and of course, in terms of the scope of protection of your trademarks, you register your trademark locally in Trinidad and Tobago. Does that registration mark allows you protection regionally or internationally?
Well, that would be great. Unfortunately,
we subscribe to the WIPO, the World Intellectual Property. I mean, in terms of our sign-on of treaties, etc. So it should be a global protection. What do you have to say about that? Legally,
unfortunately not. And there's a multitude of reasons as why. So there's no such thing as an international trademark. No possible way to get an international trademark. You have to file in every single jurisdiction you're looking for protection for.
Coca-Cola and Apple and all these places, they have international. So therefore,
many filings.
Okay. So because I was going to say, if a company like do they have the authority?
Well, I can't speak on that. But like, for example, Coca-Cola.
Right.
So this is just for a normal, typical trademark, but in most jurisdictions throughout the world, they have protection for well-known marks. So Coca-Cola, whether or not they file in Trinidad and Tobago, we would bar any person from registering the mark Coca-Cola because it's considered to be a well-known mark.
So they have the authority to do that?
I wouldn't say they have the authority, but they would be recognized here, and we would bar another company from registering that mark because of how well known that particular mark is.
Okay, interesting. That more like sounds like the mafia. I'm just kidding. Of course, I know I want you to explain further in terms of protecting regionally, internationally, but we have to take a break. Guys, you're watching Strictly Legal on WESN. We'll be right back after this. And we are back. You're watching Strictly Legal with Rhonda Donohue and my guest, Mr. Rita Kalu, attorney at law. We are speaking about trademark registration in Trinidad and Tobago. And of course, before the break, we were speaking about in terms of the scope of protection and of course, whether or not or how do you go about registering regionally or internationally, as we say, your distinctive mark.
Yes. So essentially, whatever jurisdiction you would like protection for, you have to file in that particular country. Reason being, every single jurisdiction has its own laws, its own procedures, and of course, because we have the relative grounds, they would also have to, you know, look at their trademark registry and ensure there are no conflicting marks. So that's the reason why we don't have one international, you know, trademark. And in terms of regionally, it's a little bit more difficult than internationally, because we don't currently have any regional filing system where you could, you know, make one application that would then send the filing to the different jurisdictions. So you actually do have to go into each jurisdiction and make that filing. But we have, internationally, we have the Madrid Protocol system, which has, you know, it's come on board quite recently, and it makes filing in multiple jurisdictions internationally a lot easier, because you have one application and you designate the different countries. It goes through the same examination process independently in each country, but it's a much easier system without having to get an agent in each country, as opposed to, you know, just making one application through the system. But again, it's, you can only do that application with countries that are members of the Madrid Protocol. But more and more countries are coming onto the system. We have two in the Caribbean, but you know, there's still more countries that still need to come on board.
And also, this is something, the Madrid Protocol is something recent.
It's something we recently
Yes. Because I'm thinking, I've heard about or I've read about the Madrid Protocol.
Yes, it's been around for years.
For years. Yes. But of course, but in terms of how does that process work, you're registering through the Madrid Protocol, but mm-hmm. but how does that process work? Is it a portal that you register through?
So you have to first register in your originating country, and the originating country has to be a member of the Madrid Protocol. And so you register at the IP office at the national level, and then you subsequently make your application online through the WIPO portal, and then you designate the particular countries that you would want registration for. So it's a much easier process, and it could be more cost effective depending on how many countries you're designating. But of course, again, I would always recommend to, you know, do your searches before registering, because of course, doing a trademark search is way less expensive than having to do an application and get it rejected. And of course, what may be distinctive in Trinidad may be quite common in a different jurisdiction. So it's very important to do your searches and then, you know, make your application, whether through the Madrid Protocol, whether through directly through agents in the different countries. And it could be quite costly, of course, because now you're going in each jurisdiction, and we would need to, so I always tell clients to strategize, you know, come up with a strategy, decide what your business plan is, and then marry that business plan with where you are filing, and be very strategic about your filings so that you can afford it. Because a lot of persons look at this trademark filing as a frill, like, okay, well, when I get enough resources, I will make this particular application. Yeah. And in reality, it's something you need to consider from the very get-go. When you now think, before you even register with companies registry, my advice would be, consider your trademark, do your filings, come up with a plan and a system to get those filings done, because it becomes very, very important later on.
In addition, as you said, a business plan, because of course, if your goods and service includes food, right? Like I have a friend who has a kitchen, and she produces pastels and all these different things, and local foods, and now she has registered her mark in different jurisdiction that she wants to now trade.
Yes.
So it makes sense that way, of course, to understand, okay, from your business model, that you're not only going to trade here, but regionally in different countries, you're going to now export. So it's important that you protect your mark in those various jurisdictions that you are going to export your goods and services.
Even in countries where you manufacture. So we have a lot of local companies. I can give you an example from one of my clients who had the unfortunate experience where they were manufacturing in China, they had their particular brand, but if you go to other stores that sell similar goods locally here, they are actual counterfeit goods with their brand on it. And again, because they're going through, you know, particular countries to manufacture goods, and there's no trademark protection there, they don't have any rights there. And these manufacturers would take the same exact everything and, wow, and manufacture it and sell it to other traders locally here. And so it actually is important to not just consider the where you're actually selling these goods, but also where you're manufacturing it.
Yeah, but then that's interesting, because if your protection is if you're manufacturing, that's in St. Lucia, your protection is there, but your company is also based in Trinidad. It means you cannot file for any infringement because of the fact that there's no you are not protected here for persons who have manufacturing here. Not so?
Well, it depends. So, and that's a good point that you raised, because you have registered trademark rights, but you also have certain rights that attach to unregistered trademark rights. So, of course, you get wider protection under the Trademarks Act, but even where you are trading with a particular trademark, you can get protection under our Protection Against Unfair Competition Act. So it's quite more limited, and there's a bigger threshold and test for you to even prove that you have a trademark, for example, as opposed to if you had a registered trademark. But it's not impossible, and it's quite, you know, a reality for a lot of companies that find themselves in similar situations where you can get damages and bring an action under the Protection Against Unfair Competition Act.
So it's quite wide.
Yes.
Of course. But folks, if you want to call in, give a comment or ask a question, you can call at 628-4578. That's 628-4578. Of course, we are speaking with Ms. Tarita Kalu, trademark expert, or IP expert, rather, of Kalu, Tarita Kalu Law. And okay, so post registration, right? After you have registered your mark, then what?
So my number one advice would be, do not put it in a frame and put it up on your wall and wait for someone to infringe your trademark and then, you know, enforce your rights and, you know, use your certificate like that. Intellectual property is meant to create value for your business and for your company. And so post-registration, that is when you start to invest. You invest in your trademark, you build value behind it, and you make it a very valuable and intangible asset in your company. So you decide on your business plan, as I said, decide how exactly you can use this particular brand to get value and bring in revenue to your company. So for example, the reason that you're filing for a trademark is because you want to differentiate your goods and services from those of other traders. So you want to make sure that you are bringing brand awareness to your company, that every good and service is directly connected to this particular trademark, that you maintain proper, you know, quality and a particular reputation, make sure that persons have a good, the brand is relevant in the market. So you want to really put a lot of focus on your brand and maintain your brand image and reputation so that it's not just a certificate on the wall in case somebody come and use your trademark. Because even when they do that, you may not have much damages to get if you don't have a particular value attached to this particular trademark. So my first and foremost thing would be to, you know, actually make sure that you add value to this particular asset. You treat it as an asset. You invest in it. You make sure whatever's a new and innovative thing in the market that you're up to date and you're investing and you're improving and you're showing the market, you're building that customer trust. And then also you could consider how else can you, you know, increase your brand awareness. Should you franchise? Should you create a franchise? And a lot of persons always have this misconception, because I guess we have a lot of it, that, you know, franchising is more for the food business, you know, the McDonald's and the KFCs of the world. But what is interesting is that you can create a franchise out of, I would say, any business. Once you have established a particular valuable brand, and you have a particular system, a particular way of doing things where you consistently are able to make a price premium, volume premium, then you have what it takes to create a franchise. Meaning,
like for example, non-food outlets like Sasha's Cosmetics now, they have franchised, even out of the jurisdiction now, they have opened different franchises, stores, whatever the case is, if that's an example.
Yeah, and you can do it with any any yeah. type of business. Yeah. And
small and medium yes. besides business as well too.
And yes. then without you having to invest anything, you are now, you know, receiving a percentage or royalties mm-hmm. from whatever yeah. they are actually making. Yes. And the reason why so the benefit to the franchisor is, of course, you're expanding, you're even increasing your brand awareness and brand reputation. And the advantage to the franchisee is that they get this little turnkey company where immediately when you open, you are likely to be more successful than a new company because persons immediately recognize the brand.
Right.
And they have a customer base and a customer following. And that is the power of, you know, a brand.
And of course, that's where the negotiation power is important to ensure that you get your royalties,
yes.
right, for franchising your brand. And as you said, you sit back and relax and you enjoy the investment or yes. returns of that investment.
Well, once you sit back and relax, you have to make sure they're maintaining your brand
yes,
value.
Yes,
but
that is true. So therefore, quality control. Yes,
yes, yes, yes. So there are actually yes. a lot of. But there's a lot of legal provisions that you could put in place. There's a lot of due diligence you could do beforehand to, you know, limit those types of risks where it would dilute your trademark value in any way or form.
That's interesting. So you see, it's not just a matter of registering a mark and that's it.
No,
right?
Not at all.
Putting value to that type of registration, you know, that is very important. I believe that's a very important point that, of course, business owners can take as well. So let's deal with infringement. If someone infringes your mark, then what? Of course,
right.
Legal proceedings. You go and tell them, you know, force them to remove their mark, threaten them with some sort of action.
So that's when you pull down the certificate.
Yes.
So we are a very highly litigious society.
Of course.
And I know as an attorney at law, I should be very litigious myself. But my advice to clients, before you even come to me, before you even come to an attorney, just reach out to the other party. Because a lot of the times persons are not even aware that they are infringing, you know? Or they're probably trying to, you know, free ride a little bit, but if they are caught, they may stop.
Yeah.
And so the most, you know, cost-effective approach that you could begin with is to, you know, reach out to the other side and let them know you are infringing on my trademark.
But you know something that'll always work. No. Right? You reach out to the other side and they're like, who are you?
Exactly.
The power of the attorney at law.
Yeah. Well, yes. So, I mean, more yeah. times than not, that does not work, but it has worked in certain
yes.
circumstances, you know. So it is worth a try before, you know, you have to go to an attorney and do all of these things. And as the second point of action would be, of course, to retain an attorney at law and issue a pre-action protocol letter. A lot of persons know it as a cease and desist. And what that does is let them know, listen, this is my rights, you're infringing these particular rights, be very clear about it. And because you have done this, this is what I want. You may want damages for all the, how much damages you have suffered thus far from it. You may want, of course, want your cost because you had to pay an attorney now to bring in, to send out this letter. And you would want them to, of course, stop the infringement. And I would say a lot of times you can settle the matter there at the pre-action stage. And depending on the type of matter, because, I mean, it could be one person that's just selling two goods with your trademark on it to five persons, and that's not really causing you enough damage to take this matter all the way to, you know, high court, because the candle will cost more than the funeral in that
yeah.
case, right?
Yeah.
And in circumstances like that, I like to spend a little more time than usual in the pre-action stage, see if you can get it settled. If not, or in the instance where, you know, you're dealing with counterfeit goods where people are misleading the public and it's a health issue and it's an emergency or it's a very serious issue, then you wouldn't spend a lot of time in the pre-action
yes,
stage.
You would
immediately go to, you know, file your action.
Yeah.
In some cases, you might have to file an injunction
yeah.
and then you take the process through there. But I would say, again, before you even do that, make sure you have all, you know, you have all the information. So when you go to the attorney at that stage, you make sure you understand what are the types of damages I can get from here. Because a lot of persons, intellectual property is very personal to persons. You know, this is your intellectual creation. So when someone else is using it, they can become very emotional about it. But when dollars and cents and time and energy and all these things come into play, it's very important to know upfront, you know, what is the likelihood of success chances are, if it's your trademark, it is the same or similar thing. It's high. But then also, what are the damages? What are the likely damages that I am, I may be able to get from this matter? So beforehand, because of course, you know, legal matters take time. It's a very lengthy, it's costly. And so you want to have all the cards on the table. You want to have all the information on the table before you proceed. Because, for example, if someone wants to use your trademark and they love using your trademark, you could give them a license and make money from it instead of suing them. So there are different ways to, you know, get around or make the most cost-effective and economical decision for your business. But that's typically the route you would take if someone infringes your trademark.
Of course, and can you protect or can you register a design or a mark on already or on an established product, like, for example, a coconut?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Someone has a design on a coconut, and then they register that design somehow, and then someone else has the same design, and it states that they are infringing.
So the design is the logo with the coconut? So you're registering the coconut itself?
Well, this is it. So it's you have the established, well, you have the product, which is the coconut, you have the design that is synonymous with your brand on this said coconut.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore you want to register that design on that coconut. Is that something that is possible?
Yes, so the protection would span just for the design. So if they take that design, whether they put it on a coconut, whether they put it on a bag, you know, once they reproduce that particular design that you have registered, that will be infringement.
So is that considered what an industrial design or that is something separate? That's something different.
So for example, the coconut.
Yeah.
You can get industrial design protection if you have some new particular design that you have for this coconut. Industrial design protection, it works in tandem with trademarks. In that, okay, let's take the chubby bottle, for example. So they would have filed for industrial design protection.
And just explain the industrial design protection, or what is industrial design?
Right.
I should have said that before.
So industrial design protects the ornamental aspect of a good. So for example, your perfume bottles, a lot of times there are two factors in play when you choose a perfume. The brand and the way in which the bottle looks. Well, for females, I should say. And so... So it's the trademark, the brand, and then the design of the bottle, which is the industrial design. But industrial design is very specific. So exactly what you file for, first of all, the test is novelty. So if it exists anywhere else in the world, you would not. You don't have protection for it, right? So it's not jurisdictional in terms of the test, because they're looking worldwide. Is this a new design? If it is a new design, you are only protected for that particular exact design. So if I then come and you have your coconut in the form of a Christmas tree, and I decide to do my coconut in the form of a pine tree, mm-hmm. I would not be infringing your rights. But what a lot of persons do, and I believe this is what they would have done with the chubby bottle as well, on the offset, you may not get protection of a particular shape as a trademark, just for the sole fact that it may not reach the test of distinctiveness just yet. But if you use it over time and you had it protected as an industrial design, you can then file for it as a trademark when it has acquired that distinctiveness. And the difference and importance of the difference is, firstly, industrial design protection is only, you can only get it for up to 15 years. A trademark, every time you register your trademark, is protected for a period of 10 years, but is renewable indefinitely. So that's the first advantage of, you know, going to the trademark system.
So you don't have to actually renew it physically or it automatically renews?
No, you have to file a renewal application, the same 1400, and you have to apply, but it's a renewal application as opposed to an initial application.
And if you don't renew, let's say for instance, you don't renew within a 6-month period and someone else comes to now register that particular mark, is it that they will be now prevented from registering that mark because you haven't renewed, or is there a lap?
Well, you have a grace period if you miss your renewal.
Okay.
But depending on the length of time, you can actually end up losing rights, unless, of course, you're still trading and you may have unregistered trademark rights. But yes. And then the second advantage in terms of the trademark versus the industrial design is that whereas I could just do a slightly different shape with the industrial design and not infringe your industrial design rights, with the trademark, it's same or similar. So if I do something very similar to whatever you have applied for as a trademark, right, that particular shape that has now become distinctive, then I may be infringing your trademark rights.
So, I mean, there's so many different ways or so many different aspects of
a lot of permutations and combinations. Yes,
and technicality as
yes,
well.
Yes, definitely.
In this regard. Tarita, we are out of time, you know, already. Wow. And I just want to get your closing thoughts about IP protection and the importance of using the IP systems available here in our country.
I would just like to say, you know, there's this misconception that there's no IP in Trinidad, you know. We don't have IP in Trinidad. And the reality is that more and more so, I've seen so much intellectual property being created by small businesses, large companies. And we have up-to-date, you know, international systems. We are at the, you know, we have enough laws, we have updated laws that match those internationally. We have a very, you know, well-equipped, very knowledgeable and very efficient IP office. And now we have a lot of legal practitioners that are now in this IP field. So the support is there, the systems are there, and IP shouldn't necessarily be seen as a frill, but actually a very important consideration from the get-go of a business. And well, we were speaking about trademarks today, and I would say, you know, that should be a consideration before you even file for registration of your company. And, you know, I would really want to encourage persons to, while IP could seem a bit complicated, once you get down to it and you take it step by step, it really is not that complicated.
Patience.
Yes. and a lot of reading, but
yes.
But we have everything in place to protect companies and give them that exclusivity, and that they can use this IP to actually, you know, be more profitable, get a price premium, get a volume premium. So there's a lot of benefits to it, as opposed to just looking at it as something so that other persons can't use, but something that you can take and create an asset in your company that may actually be more valuable than the actual physical assets that you have.
Something you can take that could be valuable, an asset, than the laptop. Or the cell phone, or the earrings, the diamond ring.
Exactly.
That you have. Thank you so much, Ms. Kalu.
Thank you.
I think this was very valuable, and I really want you back. Subject to your availability, of course. You know, our lawyers, we are very busy people, right? And we are grateful for you being here and providing your expertise and knowledge.
And thank you for having me.
Thank you. Guys, it's a wrap. You have been watching Strictly Legal on WESN Content Capital. Don't forget to catch our replay as well as our podcast, Strictly Legal with RondellDonnell.com. Do have a blessed day. Stay safe. Until next time. Goodbye. We'll be right back.